This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
The vision of the march remains the same, to be the world's largest human rights demonstration.
Abortion takes the life of a baby and wounds its mother and father.
The Holy Father writes, "I join all those marching for life from afar."
It's becoming more and more important for us to share the truth with our young people and help make abortion a relic of the past.
The days of legal abortion in America are numbered.
You are the voice of the voiceless. You are those who stand for love in a world of death.
So how do you take a story that is about as focused as a story can get? Well, granted, the pro-life movement is a complicated thing. It is not monolithic, but when you get 500,000 people in Washington, D.C., by some estimates a little high, you get several hundred thousand, let's say, to be more conservative, all on the same day, all on the same street, all walking in the same direction, all with one message, really, and that is that our government needs to protect the most vulnerable among us, the unborn, legally, in law. That's their message. It's very simple. It's easy to learn. You can memorize it in a couple seconds. How do you take a story that's so focused like that and turn it into a story about something else? How do you turn it into a story about gun control? And yet that actually happened. When the press did cover this last weekend's March for Life, they got the story wrong. And you almost have to try to do something like that, don't you think? When we talk about media coverage of the March for Life in Washington, D.C., I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. And thanks for tuning us in. You heard there just a few voices, and they were in the news from the March for Life. And it was well attended, and it was the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And that in itself pretty much sounds like a story to me. Not a lot of newspapers, not a lot of media outlets considered it that big of a story. A little bit later, we're going to be reviewing a sermon that was preached by Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, at a pre-March for Life service. In the second hour of the program, Dr. Peter Scare joins us from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. We'll talk about the purification of Mary and the presentation of Jesus on the church's calendar this week. And then we'll round everything off the last half hour of Issues Etc. on this Monday afternoon, January the 28th, getting some of your comments from the Issues Etc. comment line. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at IssuesETC. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a regular guest. She's a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, welcome back.
It is my pleasure to be here.
Which is worse, that the media, the national media, largely ignored the March for Life this last weekend, or that when they did cover it, how they covered it?
It's kind of like asking which is worse, getting shot in the thigh or getting shot in the foot. You know, it's really bad either way. And I think it's worth looking at both of those issues. I think it was really interesting to me. Initially, what was interesting to me was the lack of coverage. I participated in the march this year, and it was a very long day, and it was also a brutally cold day, but also a very joyful and interesting day. It is always interesting, you know, whether you're walking next to some guy who's barefoot and doing the whole march in the snow barefoot, who's, you know, a Catholic monk or something, or whether you're meeting people who have, you know, somewhat extreme political views, like they're socialists or Marxists or whatnot, and they're pro-life, or maybe they're atheist and pro-life. It's just this massive gathering of people from all different walks of life, all different ages, from extremely young to extremely old, and it's just a very interesting day. So I was very curious how the media would cover it, and I kind of thought they would do a better job with it this year. And I came home, and I turned on the TV, and it seemed like all the news was covering was that there was this dolphin that had sadly died in a canal in Brooklyn, like it had gotten lost in Brooklyn and died. And I thought, you know, if you were writing a fictional account of how bad media coverage of the March for Life is, it would be about how, you know, all day long they covered a dolphin that had died and somehow managed to neglect this story about hundreds of thousands of people marching, not just this year, but every single year for 40 years in a row against abortion. And it wasn't just, broadcast media outlets. Someone pointed out to me that the Associated Press had on its Twitter feed, which goes out to 1.6 million people, had sent out two tweets encouraging people to read stories or look at photos of a gun control march that was held this weekend in Washington, D.C. Now, this was a march that, according to the Washington Post, there were nearly 1,000 people. Some people said it was a few thousand people. I don't know. I was not there. But it was, you know, obviously a much smaller march than the 40th annual March for Life. And the Associated Press sent out two tweets. You know, one was like about how there were all these pastors and parents and survivors of gun violence in the streets of Washington. And another one said, you know, here you can look at all of our photos of these thousands of people marching for gun control. So I just thought, well, I wonder how they encourage people to read about the March for Life. And I went through the Twitter feed, and they didn't. They didn't link to a single story about this massive march. They didn't link to any photo gallery. And if you actually read the AP story on the march, the story, the photo that accompanied the article was a picture of people who were abortion rights supporters who were apparently counter-protesting. I never saw them. I mean, it couldn't have been more than a tiny handful of people relative to this massive gathering. And so you see stuff like that, and it's kind of infuriating. It is sort of a willful manipulation of reality and what's happening in the news today, what's happening in the real world, and it's a very frustrating thing to look at.
Now, how do you account for it? Where would you go to account for this? Because this is nothing new. You even cite in one of your pieces on Get Religion, a reporter who wrote about this phenomenon, 23 years ago? I mean, it seems like forever ago. How do you account for the dearth of coverage before we talk about how they did cover it?
I would like to talk about that very quickly. That was David Shaw of the Los Angeles Times, who was a fantastic reporter, who did a deep investigative analysis way back in 1990. And he showed that even then, the news media had some serious problems with bias. They were giving favorable coverage to people who support abortion rights. They were giving very unfavorable coverage to people who didn't support abortion rights. If the pro-choice side had an event, it got a lot of coverage. If the pro-life people had an event, it would get minimal or no coverage. It was something that seeped through every part of the media, and it was even witnessed in how they described the various groups. You'll notice that people who work to protect the rights of unborn children are called opponents of abortion or anti-abortion, and people who support the killing of unborn children at any point of time in the pregnancy are called supporters of abortion rights or pro-choice. You know, you get this very sort of favorable language for one side versus the other. And in fact, every time you talk about abortion, it's put in terms of, so if you're a pro-life person looking to protect unborn children, it's always phrased as if you are restricting someone else's rights. But if you're looking to expand abortion rights or have no rights for unborn children, you get to be called protective of a woman's right to have an abortion. So just all this stuff is very interesting. And he thought that this was a problem related to the fact that there wasn't much diversity in newsrooms at that time. He said that there were reports showing that 80-90% of people in newsrooms identified as pro-choice. And I don't know if there's been any recent polling on that, but clearly that is a problem. A lot of the people who are in newsrooms today they're not just people who identify as pro-choice. They're people who are vehemently pro-choice. You know, someone like Andrea Mitchell, who nearly lost her ever-living mind when the Susan G. Komen Foundation tried to extricate itself from the abortion business because it was giving a little bit of money to Planned Parenthood. And, I mean, she went after them like they were Osama bin Laden or something. She, you know, there's that level of extreme pro-choice or abortion rights mentality. And you don't see a lot of people who are skeptical of that outlook in newsrooms. And so I think that's a big problem we have to deal with.
When the march was covered, and it was here and there, how would you evaluate the coverage that was made?
Well, I would actually say I did see some good stories. And one of the things you look for, too, is whether there's just a simple, like, four-paragraph story the day after the march saying that it happened, or whether you see stories that are anticipating the march. I mean, this is a very big event. For me personally, it began with a divine service early in the morning, you know, a schlep down to the mall and, you know, a lot of activities for the rest of the weekend. You know, all these people are making big trips to D.C. It's a big deal, and it would rightly get a lot of coverage. But I thought the Washington Post did a great story anticipating the march. I thought the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette had a great story looking at some changes that were happening in the march this year. So there was some good coverage. There was also a lot of coverage that was just kind of boring. I mean, these marches are full of fascinating stories. People who are survivors of abortion, people who are thankful that their mothers didn't abort them under difficult circumstances, you know, people who are adopted, people who do adopt, people who are dealing with disabilities and what. I mean, the whole march is nothing but a collection of really interesting stories. And so you want to make sure that you're getting a feel for that. And so some of the stories we saw were a little bit more boring.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the stories that were boring, some of them that were just completely off the mark, covering the March for Life last week. And how can it, just basic journalism 101, how can this kind of a story that's big, and especially big on the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, how can it be covered better? Because, as Molly has rightly pointed out, there are fascinating stories there. The pro-life movement, while it can be boiled down to, on a day like this, one simple objective, to protect the unborn in law and allow them to enter into life, it's a complicated thing. It makes great fodder for stories. We'll talk about all of that with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway of GetReligion.org right after this. This is Issues Etc. It's Monday afternoon, January the 28th.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
At steadfastlutherans.org, we've been called contentious. We've even been called the brothers of John the curmudgeon, and we may well be curmudgeonly sometimes. But we always have the best and clearest voices in confessional Lutheranism. Articles from Molly Hemingway, Martin Nolan, Clement Preuss, Todd Wilkin, and a host of regular contributors. Come check out the new Lutheran media. Always clear, always concise, always confessionally Lutheran. SteadfastLutherans.org.
Higher Things assists in cultivating, encouraging, and promoting a distinctively Lutheran identity among their youth and young adults. To fulfill this mission, this summer, Higher Things has 3 conferences. You can find out more about these conferences at FromAbove2013.org. The winter issue of Higher Things magazine is now available. This is a topical issue on church and state that you can read in its entirety on our website, higherthings.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the March for Life in Washington, D.C. late last week. And it is remarkable.
And I didn't even notice it. And usually I'm looking at stories like this, Molly. You mentioned a New York Times piece on the March for Life that I take from the way you reacted to it, pretty much had your dander up, as we would say down in Texas. What did the New York Times, what angle did they take on the March for Life?
Well, first let's get some perspective on how the New York Times has historically covered the March for Life, which is that they typically don't. They typically don't mention it in their print publication. You might get a mention on a blog post item or something like that, but they don't actually cover a major event that's happening in America, despite their reputation as America's paper of record. But this year they actually did do a story, and it was fine. I mean, it was like what you'd expect from the New York Times, but I thought it was fine. And it was placed below the fold in the national section. And what was interesting, though, was that the more prominent story, the above the fold, slightly longer story with a with a photo that was about how 60 Catholic leaders, was how they put it, are calling on pro-life marchers. If they were really pro-life, they should support gun control. So that was the take that the New York Times put on this march, that, you know, don't worry about those hundreds of thousands of pro-lifers marching in the streets. Let's talk about these 60 people who we're going to call Catholic leaders who are saying that those people marching in the street who've been there for 40 years or whatnot, they're not really pro-life unless they happen to be supporting this issue that President Obama supports right now. I thought that was very tone deaf. I thought that was a really offensive way to cover the march, from a critical standpoint, rather than actually talking to people inside the march about what issues are important to them. But as I dug into it, I was absolutely appalled. I had an idea. It just kind of sounded like something that would come from this George Soros-funded PR group. It's a highly funded, really savvy public relations firm called Faith in Public Life. And I looked on their website, and in fact, that's exactly where it came from. It was this group that basically does President Obama's bidding on all sorts of things. They ran cover for President Obama during the HHS mandate when religious groups were outraged. They made it seem like there were religious people who didn't really have a problem with it. They really ran an excellent campaign. And one thing that I thought was really ingenious that they did was they ran two simultaneous campaigns. One was that the Catholic bishops were being way too partisan and way too political. And they got stories about this in every major outlet. I mean, the Los Angeles Times rewrote a press release that they sent out, and they ran it. Then simultaneously, they ran this uber-partisan, uber-political campaign against Paul Ryan called Nuns on the Bus. And despite the fact that there were like three or four nuns on this bus that was funded by this Soros group, it got front page coverage in major publications, like gushy profiles on broadcast media, and they were these are campaigns that they ran simultaneously. And I thought, well, you know, there's no way that this group is also behind these 60 Catholics who were told are leaders. And I was looking at, and it was, they were exactly the same group behind it. I thought it was appalling.
Now, we've talked about this before, but just as an aside, all sorts of groups issue press releases and would love nothing more than for the press to simply rewrite it or copy it word for word and put it in the paper. So this happens all the time. What's your big concern as a journalist about how that impacted coverage of the March for Life?
Yeah, PR groups, that's what they're there for. They're there to pitch you on a story. And a journalist's job is to be highly skeptical. Like, the whole point of being a journalist is that you should be skeptical, regardless of if it's a group that you're already naturally skeptical about or one that you love, that you already share their politics with. So if I got a press release that said, hey, we're trying to sabotage this massive human rights march by claiming that there's this movement that's, you know, really significant of people calling for the real pro-life issue being gun control, I would ask some questions like, okay, so let's go through these names. How large are the contingents they're leading at the pro-life march this year? Have pro-life marchers actually even heard of these people? You know, I noticed some of these names are people that we usually see more aligned with leftist or extremely progressive causes. Are we sure that pro-life marchers actually would find their call to support gun control, persuasive even? I mean, I would have just asked some basic questions, how many years they've marched, if they have ever marched. You know, why this Obama friendly group is running this press release today. You know, just basic skeptical questions that would make a story better.
Speaking of making it better, you have some thoughts here. I know that Terry Mattingly has also chimed in on this. He has a perpetual and annual concern about coverage of the March for Life. What would basically make the stories better? What kind of stories are there that simply are not being written?
Well, and you know, a lot of what we're concerned about at Get Religion is the religious angles to news, so that's kind of what we've been focusing on. One of the things that's very interesting about the development of the pro-life movement is how that movement has interacted with religious groups over the years. So it would be very interesting to see, you know, were Mormons present? Were they involved? And if so, at what level? Who represented Southern Baptists? I mean, one of the interesting stories that I happened to witness is that the Lutherans for Life contingent was significantly, dramatically, you know, possibly exponentially larger than it's ever been before. Now, a lot of that had to do with the fact that the Lutherans had a conference the day after on life issues, but there, it was also a sort of pan-Lutheran conference. You had the head of the new North American Lutheran Church, or whatever that NALC group is, present. You had district presidents from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, or a district president from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and the very head of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod marching for the very first time. These are interesting developments. They show how this movement is growing or expanding or changing over the years. And it would be interesting to see who stands out from the norm in these groups, or if there is anything that shows the complexity of the movement. I always find it interesting to just see how diverse the population is there, and it's something that doesn't really crop up in the stories.
Talk about that diversity, because you mentioned earlier on just about every kind of prefix that you could attach to the term pro-life was represented there in that several hundred thousand. Talk about the diversity of the March for Life.
Well, it's it's just something that's best probably witnessed in person, and because the march keeps a very narrow focus, which in terms of defense of unborn children. You see a lot of people who share that passion of wanting to protect these unborn children. And so it was actually a really brutally snowy and cold day on Friday, so I didn't get to move around quite as much as I normally like to. But I saw, for instance, people, Gays for Life, which was who were marching. I don't know if I've actually seen that group before in the National March. And you see people coming from Catholic dioceses from across the country. I met, people who are just extremely young and using street activism. There's a group, I think maybe they're out of Chicago, that are a bunch of young people that do, they have these trademark yellow balloons that say life on them. And they have a very joyful presence about them. You see people from every different religious order. I noticed an uptick in the number of Orthodox people, and they were Orthodox Christians who were chanting. You also see people who are Jewish, Muslim, and people who are, who are from even, pagan communities and whatnot. So it is a very religiously diverse group of people, and I think that's an interesting story to tell.
What are the basic questions, with a few minutes before we have to wrap it up, some basic questions that could be asked about the March for Life in a year, but really had to be asked about the March for Life this year, the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade?
I am not sure if I understand that question. I'm sorry.
Well, give me like one basic question that, if you're a reporter on the street and you have the digital recorder in your hand, you're standing out there, the kind of question you're going to be asking the people who are marching by on the streets of Washington, D.C. on the 40th anniversary?
Oh, I would just ask everyone why they're there, because everyone has a different story about what compelled them to be involved. I would ask people who've been involved in the movement what has changed over time, what they're hopeful about, what they're worried about. I think that it's you're never going to have that kind of contact with the grassroots people who are involved in this effort to protect unborn children, and I would not pass up that opportunity.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a reporter in Washington, D.C. She's a contributor to GetReligion.org. You'll find a link to Get Religion at our website, IssuesETC.org. Click Listen on Demand. Molly, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
When we come back, related but also kind of in our bailiwick here at Issues, etc., a sermon review. The sermon we've decided to review on this Monday afternoon after the March for Life is a sermon that was actually preached before the March for Life at a special service held for Lutherans there who were gathered in Washington, D.C. Pastor Matt Harrison, the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, marching there for the first time, also had an opportunity to preach on the occasion of the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. We're going to review that sermon in the next half hour of Issues, etc., using our typical sermon diagnostic, as we always do. And remembering, this is an occasional sermon, so we're especially critical. We're listening for how often Jesus is mentioned. He ought to be mentioned numerous times. And if he is, then is he the subject of the verbs? And what are those verbs? We'll go through that diagnostic on the other side of the break in a little more detail and then review a sermon preached by Pastor Matt Harrison in a service right before the March for Life in Washington, D.C., on the occasion of the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade and the March for Life. We'll be right back. We're joined now by listener Rocky. Rocky, tell us about the tax benefits of donating stocks to Issues, etc.
What we discovered in talking with our tax people and our stock advisors is that it would be beneficial for us to be giving our charitable donations by this means, by giving stocks, which meant that we could give a stock and essentially say if you gave a $100 stock, it's straight money to whatever charitable organization you want to give, as opposed to cashing it out, we'd only be able to give whatever portion is left over after the tax consequences.
How would you advise our listeners if they're interested in donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds?
They need to go and talk to their stockbroker or their tax person, and I think they'll find out it makes a heck of a lot of economic sense. And you're much better steward with your money, because what you're ending up doing is stretching the dollars that you're able to give donation-wise, and you're able to give a whole lot more directly to those people that you want to support, and you're able to preserve much more for yourself using the laws that have been provided for it.
Rocky, is there anything that we left out that you want to tell our listeners?
Well, the only thing that you've missed is that people really need to support Issues, etc. This is a terrific way to do it in a very economical way. It's a way to do it and be good stewards of the resources that God has blessed people with. And I would encourage everyone to support Issues, etc. in every possible way that they can. And if this is available to them, I'd encourage them to look into it, because it not only will help them, but it'll help Issues, etc. also.
To find out how to reduce your tax burden and support this worldwide outreach by donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds, talk to your stockbroker or tax advisor, and then call Craig here at Lutheran Public Radio, 618-223-8385.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Brooklyn, New York. Hope Lutheran, Birmingham, Alabama. Our Savior Lutheran, Paradise, California. St. John Lutheran, Ray, Michigan. Peace with Christ Lutheran, Fort Collins, Colorado, Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Kimberling City, Missouri, the Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Salinas, California, St. John's Lutheran, Algoma, Wisconsin, and St. John's Lutheran, Colton, California. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues, Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, and click support. The Issues, Etc. 300.